So I was in an unusual, but not, I think, unique position at crunch time in my teens and early 20s. When it was well and truly time to become who I was supposed to be as an adult person and figure out where I fit. Because normal certainly wasn't good enough for a brethren person. I've been raised to choose daily not to live just like any normal person might. Trained to not even be able to walk around living the life of a normal person without feeling filled with shame. Because Christians had to be better than normal people to live better lives that meant more. Being merely world normal meant ending up in hell because you had clearly never been a true Christian. To be merely normal would be a fall from grace. It was beneath us, a poor testimony. Even after leaving her admittedly very cultish compared to ours exclusive brethren group, Carol says,
"My standards were definitely very high for myself, partly because I felt the weight of that alone in the world responsibility very keenly. But as I gradually assimilated into the wider world and got a truer understanding of humanity, I rapidly became more forgiving of both myself and others, I think, probably within the first few years of leaving."
All this put a lot of pressure on us. Hard to find a place and know who we were. It all came back to being expected to never fit in anywhere except as part of my own insular church culture. What I needed at that point was to meet lots and lots of different Christian people and talk and listen to them. That didn't happen. I was cut off from the rest of the Christian community in my town. I've been deeply trained to unthinkingly choose not to be part of the Christian subculture that was out there, with its own concerts and videos and celebrities, games and slang. Once again, brethren people of my stripe were required to remain above all these attempts to take the things of God and bring them down to an earthly level. Wrong-headed attempts to make Christianity fun for us, it was felt, instead of just being fun for God. My church was supposed to be the real one, and so it was thought good to not connect much to other Christians who didn't come to our meetings. To do otherwise would have been beneath us, and dangerous. Before the church division happened, I was already being encouraged to separate myself from all that dangerous stuff, as it was cropping up among us. And then, sure enough, self-fulfilling prophecy that it was, all those people who were into Christian rock and Christian videos and slang and stuff soon lost sight of the clear leading of Scripture. Sadly, they found themselves happily at another church or setting up a more modern, accepting brethren group of their own, where sadly they attended happily, the Judases. So I was to be careful, protect myself, draw away from all of that. For precisely the same reasons, I hadn't been allowed to connect too much to Kevin Durkee or Peter Keyes in grade school, with the TVs in their houses and Mad Magazine and Star Wars figures everywhere. I had to avoid contamination. I needed to keep my faith from getting dirty. Well, not only my faith, but also my life, my heart, and my mind. The word we used was defiling, dirty. The opposite of defiling was edifying. And my church's favorite sort of edification was stuff about avoiding defilement. Good, as presented to me at church, didn't really seem to have any identity at all without evil. Lately, I have come to suspect that really the reverse is more likely to be true. So, reaching the end of my teens, I found that my Christian social life was the product of a lifelong practice of having all the local Christians and all the local regular kids go play outside while I was shut away from my childhood inside with the Bible, with God scowling over my shoulder the whole while, waiting to rap my knuckles if I skipped a cubit or a begat. I know that Muslim, Jehovah's Witness, and Mormon kids, along with any number of kids with control-freak atheist parents, report having a similar experience of childhood, and a similar experience of not knowing how to connect to people once they'd left home. Some Christians, though, had large, warm families with a lot of connection in them. This always seemed to help out kids who are raised like that. Families really helped a lot of people in our culture. Even if the family connection involved a lot of fighting, at least it was connection. At least they weren't shut away alone. Having a bunch of brothers and sisters to play and fight with no doubt added so much. My own family had a lot of gray, awkward, empty silence, distance, isolation. For the heart of a child, this is like putting a plastic bag over his head with an elastic band around the neck. The power of fear. Our cultures teach us what to fear. They teach superstitious fear of whatever they think threatens or whatever exaggeratable fears they can sell products to alleviate. See, gluten. Also, Y2K, swine flu, peanuts, meat, germs, the sun, water, and the air, and cartoons. This does not so much serve the people as it emphasizes the supposed importance and necessity of the cultural system itself. So let's review the fears. We Plymouth Brethren people truly feared this world that hates Jesus so much. We feared television, which was a window looking out onto said Jesus-hating world. We feared alcohol, because it would make us alcoholics. We feared movies, because they would make us addicted to pornography and dirty our faith and reputations. We feared other churches and books written by other Christians, because they might warp our faith and make us believe things about God and Christians that weren't true. For example, that maybe our church wasn't actually better than other people's. Most of all, we feared anyone mistaking us for normal people, somehow confusing us for the mere mortals who lived all around us, the lost souls, the damned. We needed to be examples to the world. We didn't fear isolation, alienation, narrow-heartedness, the extinction of forgiveness, grace and mercy among us, unthinking Pharisee and Jezebel spirits in our dealings with others, spiritual drought, blindness, poverty, the completely sliced and diced state of the Christian community in our area, or anything else we might otherwise have realized we needed to beseech God for. And we should have feared all that. We should have prayed about it collectively, publicly. We were spiritually poor, blind, and naked, and we didn't fear it or feel it, because that was normal for us. But I was smothering in there, and there were problems with the only allowable relief from it, my church's own youth group stuff. My father and the men who ran it didn't get along. In fact, most of the men running it had been the very ones who got my father kicked so roughly to the sidelines and forbade him helping out or speaking up at church. Ironically, they said they were doing this because he wasn't loving enough. Oddly, the experience taught him very little about love, mercy, and forgiveness. To make matters worse, one of the married men who was organizing and hosting our youth group events at his house was having an affair with my married aunt. I bring this up not to judge them, but to convey succinctly why it was hard for me to accept him as a mentor and to plainly share with you the kinds of things that made youth group awkward. I was aware of all of this in adolescence. And our youth group was a bit of a battleground at that point. There was a struggle over our hearts and lives and minds. Would we be taught good scriptural brethren ways, or would we be seduced by modern Christian crap leaking in from other churches? Some of the modern Christian culture, Christian pop songs, slang, celebrities and so on, modern translations of the Bible and praying with you and your instead of thee and thy, was finally starting to find its way into our youth group at long last. And besides my being trained to fear and distrust and disrespect it rather than get into it, my parents were flat out against it and didn't like my being taught by people who didn't take a clear stand against this garbage. Garbage in, garbage out, right? Why drink from mud puddles? Also, I cannot exaggerate how much our youth group catered to upper middle class preppy jocks. Sports were a big thing. I had a problem with sports. Really kind of boycotted them, almost as a point of defiant pride. I was the Plymouth Brethren goth emo scene kid, and as far as I knew, I was the only one of those in the whole world. So I just wore a lot of black and was gloomy and refused to do things that involved sudden motion of any kind. People reacted with fear, disdain, and distrust. What was wrong with me? Why wasn't I enjoying it all, like they were pretending to? I almost looked miserable and tense. That wasn't right, was it? They asked me if I was a Satanist because they felt I looked like one. Black t-shirt and all. Or they just ignored me because I was different, because that's what you did when someone or something was different. Or if they changed, you ignored the situation. Important not to react. No point trying to understand. Opting out. I had reached my latter teenage years feeling cheated. I had paid my dues by sacrificing everything that would have made my life livable, and I was getting nothing in return. The past was gone. There was nothing in my present, and I saw no future for me in the culture. I went off to university having never tried a beer, never gone to a movie theater, never had a Christmas tree, never danced, never played cards, never laid a finger or anything else on the various girls I had pined after at church and at school. I was the biggest Star Wars, Star Trek fan there was, who'd never seen those movies. I did not have porn. I'd never been to a party or non-church social gathering. I'd never gone to another church. I'd never joined a club, taken a lesson, or played on a team. I'd gone to all manner of brethren social things all over the continent, but hadn't really landed a girlfriend or any male acquaintances. I was trying to satisfy my love of music with oldies, easy listening radio stuff, the stuff old people listen to, elevator music. I went to meeting, I read my Bible, I prayed, and it wasn't working, it wasn't paying off. There was no place for me to be. There was no one for me to be. At high school, one expects cliques. One expects the most popular, attractive, affluent, sporty, charming kids with the biggest personalities to have the best time and kind of change the shape of the place to better fit them and their friends. It was supposed to be different at a church. Of course it wasn't. And I had attended a regular high school, unlike the many Christian kids who are homeschooled nowadays. I had opted out of high school for the most part, mostly for religious reasons, partly by my own choice. It didn't make sense. There had been an archery team. There had been a computer club. There had been yearbook. I had been too shy to try out for those. And there had been kids who read comics, kids who programmed computers, kids who read science fiction and fantasy, kids who drew and painted and wrote songs and played music, kids who liked TV and movies. But I hadn't hung out with them, apart from sometimes eating with them at lunch. Certainly not on weekends or holidays. I wasn't supposed to, so I hadn't. I went off to university with no high school connections to maintain and left university without really maintaining connection to anyone once a course was over. I never even went over to fellow students' apartments. Instead, I spent weekends and holidays spectacularly failing to socially engage in a huge, lively youth group which had none of those kind of kids doing the kinds of activities I just described above, really, at all. It was like I had sacrificed the environment that fit me a tiny bit for the one that didn't fit at all. And I felt ripped off. The kids who really thrived were supplementing their youth group experience with people from farther afield. They had healthy social networks on teams at school. They had options Friday nights. And they all seemed to leave our group in the division when I was 21. I knew that some of the young people at our meeting were partying, were trying beer, sneaking cigarettes, going to movie theaters, playing video games in pool halls and arcades, being on sports teams, sneaking out to high school dances, covertly listening to AC/DC, Metallica, or Kiss under the covers or in their cars. And they were doing just fine with meeting. No one took them terribly seriously as Christians, necessarily, but they were getting by. They were having fun. They had a circle of friends. They fit somewhere. They were fun to hang out with. They always had people around them. I felt like I had nowhere to be, nowhere to stand, no one I could be that I was allowed to be. Ruth was a very different sort of oddball to the one I was, where I'd been dark and sour and quietly verbose with a lot of anger and philosophy and discontent lurking beneath nerdy preoccupations. She was quite a bit more Anne of Green Gables.
My birth culture worked with my temperament to create a stranger and pilgrim, a lifelong seeker of a place to belong and a people to belong with. When I was a child, a starry-eyed idealist who thought every word of brethren doctrine was straight from the lips of God, my state of not belonging anywhere was a badge of honor to be worn with humble pride. Among the kids at grammar school, I was the strange girl who wore her hair in two braids, while the other girls wore theirs shoulder length, wore unfashionable dresses while the other girls wore jeans, and didn't celebrate Halloween or Christmas because they were pagan. I had no clearer sense of the meaning of that word than the other kids did, but I parroted my elders. I wandered friendless on the playground, swinging on the swings and singing Sunday school hymns to myself, rather glorying in not belonging among the children of men. Among my boisterous non-brethren Irish Catholic family of dozens of cousins and aunts and uncles, I was the aloof, bookish girl who preferred to withdraw into a quiet corner and bury her nose in a book or put pencil to blank page, rather than participating in noisy matches of ping pong or loud conversations about the latest baseball game. It was a sign that I was a good Christian, that I didn't fit among those awful, worldly Catholics. No doubt they were very nice people, but they weren't our tribe. Among the neighborhood kids, I was the religious girl who was going to teach you John 3:16 and invite you to Bible hour in spite of yourself. As a child, I fit in among the brethren kids, just as I was supposed to. We were like a close-knit family of siblings. We all played house, or pioneers, or hospital, and no one felt left out or lonely. all of that changed when we became teenagers. There was no place in my birth culture for a seeker and dreamer like me, and the more I became who I was, the more I didn't belong. The kids who fit in were the kids with the showy talents, the kids who took piano lessons and could fill in playing piano for hymnsings, the kids who played on the soccer team at school and could organize a team at youth group. If you didn't play piano and couldn't stand playing sports such as soccer and volleyball, there was no place for you. There was no place for me. The other meeting young people formed a very tight, close community to which I could never belong, no matter how hard I tried. My family lived an hour and a half away from meeting, while the other kids lived within 20 miles of each other. They saw each other every day at school. They all went to the same high school, while I was never allowed to attend high school. I was homeschooled instead. And they hung out on the weekends. They had in-jokes, insider secrets, cliques, after-school activities, the camaraderie of being a cluster of Christian young people together in a secular school, a fabric of shared life that had no place for an odd man out like me. And the adults never encouraged them to try to make me feel included and wanted. Perhaps that would have been too Christ-like. It was my fault if I felt awkward and unheard and tongue-tied in the tight circles of chattering young people. I felt so unwanted, at times, that I ducked into the woods behind the meeting house, or the room off the meeting room for nursing mothers, or hid in our car to hide the fact that I was crying for sheer heartache. Conferences were the worst, an absolute sea of people who couldn't care less if you were there or not, all dressed in their most stylish clothes, while you were dressed from the proverbial missionary barrel and had no sense of style or color coordination. I used to hang around circles of discreetly made-up young women with their neat jean skirts and lacy mantillas and spotless Oxfords, waiting for someone to speak a friendly word to me as a dog might await crumbs that fell from the table. To realize that you did not and would not ever belong among the Lord's chosen people, and you weren't equipped to fit in among worldly people or church people, no matter how hard you tried. That was a mindfuck.
Years later, on Facebook, I have added many people from both my Brethren youth group circle and also from high school. I have yet to see myself in a single picture any of them posts online, despite how many Throwback Thursdays pictures of people I knew are posted. This gives me a bit of a reminder how invisible I was. It's like no one noticed me until I opened my mouth and shared my unconventional, troubling thoughts and feelings. Then people headed for the hills. The most legalistic of us weren't the ones who fit in, nor the ones who most enjoyed youth activities. In fact, it was kind of the opposite. The really socially adept folk were able to have fun with kids at school, hanging out with non-Christian friends after school, then being brethren at youth group activities. They didn't take things too seriously. They hadn't put all of their eggs in that one meeting collection basket. They could have it both ways. Many of them grew up to be influential and make their local brethren group less legalistic by creating a culture in which the occasional beer was drank and people went to NHL games and so on. Legalists have generally driven folks like that away, but it hasn't always worked. Sometimes liberty wins. Not around here, I don't think, though, and not when I was in my 20s, certainly. It wasn't as hard as some might think to feel like you didn't fit in our huge youth group. And when talking years later to those then teens who were clearly coming up with all of the ideas and forming the whole shape of events and the climate there, it is clear that they each felt like they didn't fit in either, though they ran everything. To really not fit in, all you had to do was be a quiet, not terribly attractive girl or guy who disliked noise and group activities and sports. The further into your 20s you got, the worse it was, of course. There were these girls like Ruth who were quietly, meekly attending meetings, denied post-secondary education, and waiting for a boyfriend to slowly morph into a husband to make her a mother. Some had real faith in God or the culture, and were waiting for this boyfriend in extremely figure-concealing outfits, without stooping to such tactics as flirting, wearing makeup and jewelry, dieting, working out, removing body hair, dressing fashionably, wearing contacts, or having their hair styled in any specific way. I know of several of these women who are still waiting for Prince Heho as they go through menopause. They did absolutely everything the culture demanded, but it simply hasn't paid off. For them, nor for their male counterparts. And they can't seem to get together, either. Anne only waited for her 20s and ended up marrying outside the fold, but writes about passively meeting one's spouse by saying,
"One thing I find was particularly destructive is the way I approached guys as a result of always just being encouraged to pray about it. I can open up journal entries at random, and they are full of longing prayers of, 'Lord, help me to be obedient to your will,' and 'please let some specific brethren guy make a decisive move if it is your will.' The irony is that I was suffering with longing, but I had this idea that I had to remain passive and that something would happen when it was God's will. I didn't know how to interact with guys that I liked, so I mostly ignored them or acted uninterested while dying inside as each Bible conference came to an end with nothing having ever happened. I was probably asked out 2 or 3 times total in my young adulthood until I left the meeting at age 27. In all 3 cases, I was not interested in the guy who asked, and I felt really bad saying no. The guys I liked probably thought I was not interested. I had to learn how to talk to guys I was interested in, instead of pining and praying over whether it was God's will or wait on the Lord to act. Not sure what exactly that would have looked like. If I look at my journals throughout my 20s, I see this as the most awful waste of time, energy, and potential. I would have been far better off dating and learning from the interactions rather than longing and suffering and praying about guys who probably never realized I felt anything for them."
At the guy end of things, you always felt like you'd better not make a decisive move or approach a girl without the full support of God and the church culture. She had to be the one. You needed permission. There was no room for sizing things up and figuring out what you wanted. You weren't supposed to be marrying someone you just wanted. You were supposed to marry someone who was God's choice, and the church culture had to see that too. If you were someone who had trouble fitting in socially, you were kind of screwed, and you could fail to fit in due to stuff you liked as much as for stuff you didn't. If you were into computers or games or nerdy things or science fiction or Lord of the Rings or cartoons or that kind of thing, not only was the church culture trying to censor that stuff out, but you were weird to the popular sports folk, too. They'd sneak out and climb over the back fence to get at some Coors Light in a hockey game, but they'd never do that for Star Trek. Nowadays, I know I should never be surprised at how many parents and kids in brethren circles are very into Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, and Doctor Who, and so on. But back then, most of the kids I went to youth group with either had never heard of most of that or weren't admitting to it. I didn't know brethren people who liked what I did back then. Now, most of the smart kids' parents can talk Doctor Who right with me. Most still don't have TVs, of course, but they've got laptops and iPads. It wasn't like that when I was an adolescent. By the time I was in my early 20s, I was too old for my church's youth stuff, and not yet married. I hadn't met a girl I could date and marry and produce the next crop of brethren children with, which was kind of the goal I'd been given, which goal I was fine with, unlike the no Star Wars thing. Timely reproduction and keeping us off the streets seemed to have been much of the point of our youth group activities. But I had been marked by my culture as one of the ones who simply wouldn't be reproducing, a genetic and spiritual reject, unsuitable. And to this day, that self-fulfilling prophecy has fulfilled itself, as many group predictions can end up doing. But I am no longer certain God wants there to be a new crop of brethren children who stay brethren into their dotage anyway, not without some major reworking of what brethren even means. And I don't think the relaxation of the rules is all that needs to be done. It's great if the legalism loosens up, but what about the love? Is that starting to flourish?